Welcome to the Life in the Stocks podcast, ladies and gentlemen. My name's Matt Stocks. I'm the host, and the show features unedited, in-depth, candid conversations with a wide range of musicians, actors, comedians, and creatives. If you're not already, be sure to subscribe to Life in the Stocks on your favorite podcast platform. We're available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and indeed all major podcast platforms. Be sure to give me a follow on Facebook, Instagram, and TikTok as well, at Matt Stocks DJ. That way you can keep up to date with all of my live Q&A dates, my DJ performances, and of course, who's coming up on the show as well. But without further ado, let's crack on with the show, shall we? Here we go.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
There we go.
Hello, handsome. How are you?
Hello, mate. How are you going?
I'm very, 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 very well. could you do me a favor? You know, on the bottom left of your screen, is there a little level adjuster for your microphone to turn your microphone down ever so slightly? Do you know how to do that? So if you hit the arrow next to the mic, and then there should be a list of options. Then if you go to audio settings,
right,
and then you should then, if you see the settings come up.
Input then, level, input volume.
If you could just dip your dulcet tones down ever so slightly.
Check, how's that?
That's it. Yeah? Spot on. Yeah, man.
Okay, that's pretty much smack in the middle.
There we go. Lovely stuff.
Okay, great. Man. Shit, great. I wish I'd known that. I've done hundreds of interviews with this.
Well, the only reason I didn't, you know, anticipate the noise, but I just checked out an interview that you and Simon did, and I was like, ooh, mic's very loud. So, I had some kind of context, and then obviously I like to have my headphones lovely and loud,
as
is the way. Anyway, golden content this is. Dude, can I just say straight out the gate, you have, as a man who is, you know, a proud owner of many shirts, I love shirts, and I think my collection is pretty good, but in the short times that I've spent around you, and I've, you know, obviously kind of, you know, been following you on social media since we met and have seen a few posts, and I'm just like, man, this guy has the best shirt collection out of anyone I think I've ever met. Where do you get your shirts, Mike?
Very kind
of
you.
Let's get to the real, the juicy stuff.
Well, I do. I am a bit of an addict on especially the sort of stripy office chic. I've got 100 of those. This particular shirt is from Zara, and I bought this years ago. And coincidentally, Simon's got the exact same one.
Well, you guys have really kind of molded your style so well for the Empire State Bastard imagery. Was there conversations that took place, or was that just kind of, you know, naturally where the image that you guys rock in day-to-day life fell?
For a long time with Biffy, I always wore suits. You know, I always liked to look smart, and I always thought of it as like, well, you know, I really feel like I mean business if I'm dressed like that. And I kind of have always liked just looking smart on stage. Not enough bands kind of do that, you know. And for this band, we certainly didn't want it to be, you know, just a couple of dudes in t-shirts and jeans. It's just, anyway, I just hit him with the, I think we should look like Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds.
I see it, yeah. And I dig it. And yeah, it suits the project, as you say, because it's kind of like you're confusing people with the marriage of the image and the sound. And
well,
it's like,
you know,
metal
is up there with punk rock as being the most gate kept fucking music of all time,
and conservative with a little C.
Yeah, and I'm quite the gatekeeper too, and it's just to kind of subvert that idea of this is metal, this is not. I really enjoy that. And to be honest, nobody at the moment seems to have taken any particular offence. I think that, you know, I'm sure we'll get on to the drummer later on. Mm-hmm. I think having that particular guy behind you just trumps everything, really. It's like, okay, these guys are fucking legit, you know.
Yeah, man.
It's quite a blessing.
Yeah, and the mustaches. I'm a mustache man myself as well. Was that something that you know, was part of the look before this band?
I hate it. It was Simon went for it, and I thought, fuck it, I'll go for it as well. But it just gets in the fucking way, man. I'm starting to get used to it now.
It really suits you.
Thank you very much. I am starting to get along with it, to the point where I see pictures of me without it, and I think that I look kind of weird.
Who's that guy? Yeah.
I know, exactly. And I have got quite a pronounced upper lip.
Mate, I think you wear it well. You rock it. And it was, you know, it was really cool to meet you guys at Wacken. And I really like going to European festivals for that reason. And we're going to kind of go all over the place today. And I'm excited to have you on the show and hear about your, you know, life journey and story so far and everything that's kind of led to where we are. And obviously, you know, the new band that we're talking about here. But for me, the European festival circuit is different to the UK scene in that everybody who's there is working. I feel like everybody at the UK festivals that I go to, they're kind of just like, what do you do? They're just there. There's a lot of hangers-oners. And it's a little bit cringy for me being in those areas, whereas I find Hellfest, Wacken, Copenhagen, these kind of festivals, everybody who's there is either working for the festival or in a band, and they're the people I want to see, like the people who are actually there to get shit done rather than just take photos with famous people. So it's lovely to meet you in that context.
Thank you, Matt. No, you make a really good point there. There was definitely a complete lack of, you know, you're in the backstage area and whoever you're talking to is actually looking over your shoulder to see if there's anyone more famous they can talk to, mm-hmm. which is all you get at fucking UK festivals. I've had it done to me. I do it too. But no, there's, I don't know, European festivals, there's just, everything's a little more better organized, just a little more user-friendly. I feel like, as well, I didn't realize that Wacken was quite so old school, man. It is fucking
metal, isn't it?
Proper denim and leather, you know?
Yeah.
So I'm surprised we didn't get pelted with piss. It was really good fun.
Well, you went on right after my friends in The Answer as well, who were kind of just like, you know, straight down the line rock and roll, great band for Northern Ireland. And
yeah,
they were on just before you on the same kind of dual stage where they had the kind of 1-2 thing going on. So I got to catch up with them before, you know, meeting you guys. And it was just like, wow, what a cool bill. You know, and then you've obviously got the kind of Megadeths and the Maidens and those kind of bands that service the Battle Jacket crowd.
Indeed.
But there's definitely, you know, and then they had like punk bands like the Real McKenzies and Dropkick Murphys, like the kind of Celtic Irish influenced punk rock stuff too, so it
and
was
Biohazard.
All
let's not forget Biohazard were there,
hell yeah,
and they watched us, which was quite the mind-blowing occurrence for myself and Simon in particular. I love seeing Simon get excited or you know, because he's a fucking really famous guy, but to see him actually go, oh my god, you're Danny from Biohazard, and just watching the set, it was like, wow, Simon's slightly starstruck. This is really cute. Doesn't happen very often, you know.
I think you have a couple of combustible and really cool elements going on stage beyond just the amazing music itself. And that's, as you say, you've got this really famous guy who's known for a certain thing at the front. And then you've got this other really famous dude who's known for exactly the thing that he's doing at the back. And so you get all these people, and you know, I was there sort of the side of the stage watching everybody else, watching you as much as I was watching the band. I was like watching everybody else checking the band out, and it's an exciting beast to behold.
Yeah, I'm glad you think so, Matt. I feel like, to me, I'm as fascinated by the whole thing as everybody else. When you take the music on what it is, it very much is an extreme metal thing, but I recognize that the context is important in everything, really. But it is quite fascinating, these different elements coming together. I think that,
Let's mention Naomi as well, of course.
Naomi,
cool female energy within the mix as well. And the brief time that I did spend with you all, I was like, man, these guys seem like a real band. Like, it isn't just four individuals, even though you've only been together a very short time. You've only played, you know, a short handful of shows. There's already, for me, band chemistry there. And then you've got like a female kind of in the mix as well. Completely defusing, because it could just be, you know, male testosterone and aggro city, and you got that as well.
She brings an awful lot of balance to proceedings, and just this morning I suddenly got a real pang of regret. If there's one thing I regret about the record, is that I didn't know Naomi when we recorded it, and I wish that somehow if I could change the timeline, then I would have fucking got her involved. I'd never even met her when we did the record.
You're just gonna have to do a follow-up, mate.
And well, there's
problem solved.
Definitely gonna do that. Yeah.
Did you write apart from the lyrics? Did you write all the music, guitar, bass, and then demo the drums before?
Yeah.
Shopping it over to Dave.
I did all that stuff, and then basically sent huge chunks of stuff over to Simon. And he would arrange, edit, and, you know, try and make what we laughably call songs out of it. They're not really songs. But yeah, it was fun.
They're musical movements.
Yeah, they're little pieces. It was
vignettes.
Really, really fun trying to, you know, all the time imagining that who would play drums on this, and never, you know, not for one minute imagining that it would actually be Dave Lombardo, but pretending to be him when I was programming the stuff.
I mean, can I just cut to the bone there? Because of the clout that you and Simon have and the projects you've been involved with, Oceansize included, does it not feel to you in this stage like you've earned the interest of someone like a Dave? Or is it still, I can't fucking believe this?
Oh, no. I don't think for one minute that, you know, let's say fucking Dave Mustaine got Dave Lombardo in Megadeth, I'd be like, he's not worthy of Lombardo. Lombardo is fucking, he's just the ultimate. So I can't think of many people who I'd be like, yeah, fucking right, Dave should be playing with them. I can't believe it ever. I've told the story a fucking 100 times over the last couple of months. I still can't believe it. You know, I've just been living with him for a week in New York, and hanging out and going to see John Zorn and doing all these crazy things. And I just still can't believe that he's the guy in my band, and that he plays parts that essentially I wrote for him. You know, he's made them very much his own, but the backbeat of every part is what I had in mind. And he's just absolutely cubed it, you know?
So he did stay true to your vision in that way. How amazing and respectful and cool is that?
Well, we asked for Dave Lombardo and we got Dave Lombardo cubed. You know, he came back and just threw everything he had. And I was, you know, there was only a couple of occasions where I had to say, you can go a bit crazier on there, man. I'm sure you can just
Dave it up a bit.
a bit more juice. And it was fantastic. It's really, really magical time. But like I say, you know, that subversion of what this is all supposed to be, I don't really know. I think that obviously the name is sort of vaguely ridiculous, patently ridiculous. And so I think it was always, the music was always going to have this element of not shock as such, but, you know, sometimes metal is, when things are fucking absurdly heavy, they tend to make me chuckle a little bit.
Metal should be a little bit ridiculous.
Yeah.
Let's be honest. Knowingly so as well.
Yeah. And so it's not like we're doing this tongue in cheek and it's like, oh, you know, we're not fucking Bad News or Spinal Tap or something.
No.
But at the same
time, it's evident to me that you guys take what you do, although you have a lot of fun doing it, you take what you do incredibly seriously.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. You know, one thing I should have said at the very top of this conversation, Matt, is I'm currently nursing quite the fucking severe case of jet lag.
Right. Okay.
So, sort of
that's
piecing,
okay.
Piecing threads of ideas together is pretty fucking spacey at the moment, man. So
that's all right, mate. Well, you're in safe hands here, and you know, there's no expectation other than to be yourself and just, you know, share what's on your mind. So yeah, all good on that front. Well, listen, let's rewind right back. Let's kick your brain into gear with some kind of past anecdotes. So you're a Yorkshireman, am I right in thinking?
I am indeed, yeah.
So where are you born and raised? Where do you grow up? And kind of in your household as a kid, is music around? Is it something that you're aware of from an early age? And at what point do you begin to take interest in it beyond just a listener?
I was born in Methley, which is near Castleford, Wakefield sort of area in West Yorkshire. There wasn't a whole lot of music in the house. You know, we had a stereo. Maybe there was Hunky Dory in there. There was probably the Best of the Fucking Eagles. And that's pretty much it. So right. Where the fascination with music came from was probably my older brother, who's 4 years older than me. He was just into metal. So I remember hearing about this fucking lunatic called Ozzy Osbourne in like 1982, 83 or something. And then, you know, I just followed what he was into. He was, and round about that time, the biggest fucking band in the land was Status Quo. So I was obsessed with Status Quo, and Rick Parfitt particularly, I found especially striking, just his sort of rhythm, fucking his strumming hand. I just couldn't believe how fucking hard he was playing and how much sweat was coming off him.
Love that band, man. Love that band.
I loved him. So I my first ever gig was The Quo in 1984.
Hell yeah.
Bridlington Spa.
I got to see him at Hellfest 1 year, and they brought it. I think they followed someone ludicrously heavy, right?
Yeah.
And just the respect they command because of the legacy around the band. But the way they bring it live, right up until the end, they were a legit hard rocking, you know, fucking kick-ass rock and roll band that could go toe-to-toe with all the metal bands.
Fucking right on, man. I mean, that original lineup, to me, you know, if you just detune what they're doing, it's just Queens of the Stone Age to me. It's just, it's that same kind of boogie fucking good time grooving, that shuffle thing that everybody's fucking doing now. They were doing that Donkeys years ago. And I tell you, I remember being like 7 years old watching Status Quo in Bridlington, thinking they were fucking so loud. I couldn't believe it. And then years and years later, you know, you get used to that kind of thing. Status Quo reformed in 2014. And I went to see them, and sure enough, no, they were absurdly fucking loud again. It was like, mm-hmm. No, these guys are not fucking around. And they were still absolutely astounded. So anyway, that was it, The Quo, and then Ozzy, and then Live Aid, Black Sabbath reformed, and that was it. I was like, oh, right, Ozzy used to be in this band, Black Sabbath. And then that was it. I was just fucking on Black Sabbath, Iron Maiden. And yeah, just for a sizable portion of my childhood, that was all there was, you know. And then I've come back at age 46, 47, and that might as well have been the case for the entire intervening time, really. You know?
No, I get that. I think the music that we discover when we're falling in love with it for the first time, you know, that first love or first loves, they remain integral to who we are. And so you can, you know, stray away and discover new things and expand the canvas of influences and tastes however much you want, but at the core of, I think, that journey is these, you know, select few people that ignite that fire.
Exactly.
And to so begin with,
Black Sabbath have always been very much my sort of center of gravity. I just keep returning to those first sort of six records, and they still fucking, they get me. They just mm-hmm. fucking have me every single time. And I can't work out what it is, because quite often what they're doing is quite simple, but there's just something so intrinsically authentic that I don't hear in other bands specifically Led Zeppelin of the time. I've always struggled with Led Zeppelin, and I've always bored people by talking about how much I don't like Led Zeppelin. And I've always struggled to understand what it is, but I think it is just authenticism, if that's the right word. Just, it doesn't, I don't know, there's something so fucking pure about Black Sabbath to me.
Well, as a Birmingham boy, they're my proudest export of my home city. And growing up as a kid, you know, we'd come into contact with Tony Iommi's daughter, who's also called Tony with an I, and Geezer Butler's son, Adam Butler. And these people were around, you know, my friends were in bands with them. And so we were acutely aware as kids that the biggest metal band in the world came from our neighborhood. And it instills such a sense of home pride and also possibility and potential that the sky is the limit. Yeah. Was there any bands or performers for you up north that had that same impact on you? Was there anybody from your area that did get out, as it were?
Well, being from Leeds, what we had was fucking, I guess in later life, at one point Oceanside went on tour with the Sisters of Mercy, who are not necessarily something that I was ever into, but I can appreciate how influential they were. And I remember saying to Andrew Eldritch, like, wow, you know, you've got to be the most influential band to come out of Leeds. And he went, Gang of Four. So Gang of Four, I mean, what else have we got? Fucking Mel B, Jimmy Savile, you know, there's not a right lot.
Gang of Four though, man. Yeah, that's what's up. And so doesn't he hate being labelled or referred to as a goth band, Andrew? Doesn't he absolutely loathe the word goth?
He also hates being called Andy.
Right. You found that out, did you, the hard way?
I found that out. Nice guy, though. Took great care of us. Awful gigs. Some of the worst gigs I've ever played. And I've played some fucking bad gigs in my time. But yeah.
What, is that because the crowd didn't like your band?
Every fucking single person in the crowd every single night was a fucking colossal prick. Never forget. Big fucking sailor tattoo. Never forget. Just honestly, bastards to a man.
Was Chris Catalyst playing in them at that point?
Or no, he wasn't.
Is this well before his involvement in?
Well before, yeah.
You obviously know Chris, I presume, being fellow.
Well, who doesn't know Chris Catalyst? Come on.
So when do you begin to start playing in bands? And is Oceanside your first proper band?
I was in covers bands. I was in a band. Oh, fuck. How do I get onto this one? So when I was 13, I was doing like work experience at school, and I went and worked in a guitar shop. And the week after, I did a week in this guitar shop. And then the week after, these dudes from a band who'd just been, they'd just left the signed band, who'd been signed to RCA, and they're all like 30, early 30s. And they're looking for a guitar player. So the guy in the shop goes, there was a lad working in here last week who's absolutely fucking brilliant. So I hook up with these lads who are in their early 30s, and I'm fucking 13. And so I start going out doing gigs with them.
Are they drinking and smoking and doing all of that?
Oh, fuck yeah. I mean, it was mental. It was baptism by fucking pie, porn, and fucking hard liquor, man. It was like... So I immediately became one of these horrendous fucking
Jesus.
Yeah. And you know, this is me prepubescent, me just fucking suddenly, you know, living on fucking white lightning. But anyway, so that fell apart quite quickly because they realized they needed to get some money coming in. So I started playing in a covers band. That was great to gig in 2-3 times a week, and I would go, you know, it was just great experience learning how to play in front of an audience and feeling like it didn't matter. It was like, it's just for fun. And if these people don't like it, then fuck them. And that has kind of kept me in really good stead to this day of like, I know what I'm doing, even if you don't fucking like it. And then I went to university and formed a band with a couple of dudes who ended up in Oceanside. Basically ditched that band, which meant ditching the rhythm section, getting a new rhythm section in, and that was Oceanside.
Right. And so you guys did 4 albums, am I right in thinking that?
Correct, yeah.
There's only 2 available on streaming services.
Yeah, that's kind of my fault. We've got the rights back to 2 of the last 2 records.
So it's first 2 that are on Spotify and all
yeah,
of that.
Yeah, first 2 are on Spotify and everything else, and then the other 2 we'll go back up when I get a fucking minute. I just don't have a chance to do it.
I've been enjoying those first two records over the last few days. I'm not someone who's traditionally into that end of rock music, but I loved everything that I heard. And I think it's kind of staggering to me that the band wasn't bigger than it was with music that good. And I know sometimes it doesn't always happen, but like, have you thought about why? Because the records are fucking, the two that I've heard are as good as anything that was around in that scene at that time.
Thanks, man. I don't really know. When we got to the second album, we tried to do a few singles and all that, and no one gave a fuck. So the third and fourth albums are actually on Bandcamp right now. We thought we'd try and make a bit of money for once.
Yeah, yeah.
And for the third album, we were like, right, let's not fucking worry about singles or any of that bullshit. Let's just, so all the songs on the third album are like 10 minutes long each. And that's kind of the best one for a lot of people. I couldn't tell you which one is my favorite. I don't know, but it's definitely the one where we stopped giving a fuck what anybody thought and just did what we really, really believed in. And it was, you know, again, it's a really organic process. I think that it comes down to that authenticism thing again of like, what is your truest self? And that record was where we weren't trying to do something that sounded like this or like that. And we'd got a new bass player at that particular time. It's a record called Frames. And we just kind of just jammed all day, everything, recorded every single note that anybody played, and just slowly but surely worked it up into these crazy long epic pieces. It was all very complicated. It was all hopefully not needlessly complicated. But yeah, it took off to the extent that the people that did hear it really fucking liked it. I've just got back from a trip to New York with ESB, and I met so many people who were incredibly complimentary about those records, and like, they, you know, that's their favorite band kind of thing.
Wow, that's,
and, you
know, awesome.
We've been broken up for fucking 13 years, so it's mad that people are still interested. It really is.
Yeah, obviously left its mark. And it was the name, you know, after the Jane's Addiction song. Was that very much the reference there?
Absolutely, yeah. Jane's Addiction. Again, one of those bands that, you know, that hit me really hard at age 16, and just, they never leave. Every couple of years, Jane's Addiction come back around in my headspace, and I just go, wow, if only I could do something as good as this, you know. Mm. You could put a gun to my head, I couldn't tell you which is the best of those last two albums. Nothing shocking.
Yeah, I do a club night, like a bar, a musical themed evening of disc jockeying called Nothing Shocking, and I use the cover from you know, their album cover as the basis for the poster. And yeah, I had Perry on the show a few years ago. Magical.
No,
magical man.
He's got very, very soft hands.
Well, he looked, dude, he's 60 and he looked better than me.
Yeah. I met him quite by accident in catering at Lollapalooza in Paris. Just obviously it's his gig, you know.
Yeah, and he just floats around, doesn't he, and goes to all of them.
And there he fucking was, and I just honestly nearly fell to my knees. I'm like, God, where would I be without this fucking guy, man? Absolutely wondrous, and just a real pleasure to just be in his vicinity. You could tell he's quite the space cadet, but just so gentle.
Yeah, yeah, there's magic around him, isn't he? He's touched.
It really is, yeah.
He's touched. So who would you say your peers were? Did you have any? Because that time I started working on Kerrang Radio in 2010, and I did the evening show on there for a few years, and I was talking to someone about this the other day, but that period for me of UK music was very odd and very shit in a lot of ways. There was just a big void of, like, I don't know what it was. It was like kind of post-emo, post-indie landfill, as it's kind of referred. It was just this strange time. And in the last sort of 5 years or more, I think UK guitar music and more extreme music and heavy music is, you know, thriving again. But for me, the kind of early 2010s and teens was just a bizarre time for rock music, I think, in this country, at least.
This was a common problem for us. It just kept coming around again because it was like, who do you want to play with? You know, who would you consider to be the most ideal support? And it just wasn't realistic for us because we all loved going to ATP and seeing fucking Fantomas or Pavement or whatever. It's like, well, those bands are not going to, you've got nothing in common with those.
I went the year Pavement curated it down at Butlins. Great, same, great man. Time. That band Monotonics, remember them?
Oh,
fucking
that.
Hell.
Yeah, I was there, man. But yeah, so the only band that we felt an affinity with was Biffy Clyro. And so we toured with them a lot. And amazingly, their fans were incredibly receptive to us right up until the point they broke through with Puzzle. And then suddenly we were getting the finger like, fuck you, fucking boring shit. And it was like, oh, wow, things have changed, man.
And you were frontline to witness that.
Yeah, I was, yeah, and it's fine, you know, that's what happens. I'm going to have to pause because a guy is coming to just collect this.
Yeah, you make the drop-off, mate, all good.
I'll be right there.
Right on cue.
Have you come for this? Cheers,
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Good. I'm glad that's done. Yeah, we couldn't. We it was a real struggle for us. And, you know, similarly, we kept getting offered opportunities to tour with a band called Porcupine Tree. And we were like, ah.
Of course. They were just at Hellfest this year. Were you on the same day as them?
No, I saw a bit of them. They were on as we were coming in. I'm very good mates with Stephen. But we just didn't feel like we had much in common. And then we finally buckled and said, all right, we'll go out on tour with them. And it did us the world of good. Their audience fucking loved us. So it's hard to know who you are and where you stand and who's going to like what you do. You just can't fucking tell. It's really weird. But I think the closer you get to understanding what it is you do, probably the shitter the music's going to be. Just, you're better off not knowing. Leave that to the fucking management and the record company. Well, if you have to have a record company, then let them worry about it. But for the most part, being in a band, it is to feel this intrinsic sense of superiority to other bands. I don't feel an affinity with virtually any bands that people think I'm going to like.
Well, let me ask you this then, dude, because to sort of draw some similar parallels and perspective from my point of view, I don't have any peers in my area of work, be it DJs, be it music writers, be it radio, TV hosts, podcasters, maybe a couple of podcasters, but I've certainly noticed over my 15-year quote-unquote career, because there's such a lack of jobs and because everybody is, I think, the mix of ego and insecurity is a very ugly thing. And when you get people that are full of themselves, but also not confident in their ability, scrambling for like one job between 20 presenters, it breeds a lot of kind of snake backstabbing behavior. And not that it's the same, I don't think, with bands, but I guess where I'm going with this is I don't consider myself to have any peers. And for a long time, that was the source of a lot of loneliness and frustration and desperation, really, without being melodramatic. But I reached a certain point where I was like, you know what? To be peerless is actually good. Because I stand alone, I do what I do. Nobody can touch what I do because it's unique to me. Not to say I'm better than anybody else, just different. And I think if you just focus on what you do and kind of, you know, hone in on the craft and deliver the goods, there comes, I think, a sense of peace and release with that. Is that something you found in your musical journey?
Maybe so, man. I don't feel particularly unique. I definitely try and not give a fuck what anybody thinks. And, you know, I've always...
Because that shit will drive you mad, won't it?
Yeah, I mean, nobody likes a bad review, but you don't have that shit in mind when you're making it. Making it is the fun part of it. That's the best part of it. The actual release of a record is fun for a day or two, but then it's out. You know, what fun are you going to have with it then? I don't tour my records. So I'm, you know, touring this ESB thing, that's great fun. I haven't played my own music live for fucking a really long time. But my point was, I can't remember what my point was. Yeah, I mean, like, I look at a lot of my favorite artists, like the Melvins or Cardiacs. Like, who are their peers? They just don't have them. And that's okay. You can't go, oh, they were part of that, you know, breed of bands. Like, no, they weren't. They were just the Melvins. They were just the Cardiacs, you know? So, yeah, it's a good point. I didn't really think about it like that. You know, I don't, in my own realm, Because I still kind of think of ESB as it's not my band, it's mine and Simon's band. And, you know, coming up, it'll be Dave's and Naomi's as well. So I still think of, when I think of my music, I'm thinking of the records that I make on my own. But it's all tied up, I suppose. But ESB is definitely, it's an extreme thing. So I guess it's under this particular umbrella. I don't know if peers-wise who we could... I don't know. Maybe we're going to get swallowed up into the world of John Zorn now.
Hey, there's worse places to be, right?
Oh, I'd be so happy.
I think it's cool that, I mean, Oceanside, first of all, the end of that band, is that something that's difficult and kind of like painful and messy? How do things conclude with that group?
fucking hell. It's not something I can really go in. Basically, if I go into it, then it makes me look like I'm so bitter and twisted.
And I get it.
It was...
Well, nothing ends well, a wise
nothing
man
ends
once
well.
Told me.
One guy could not stop taking drugs in the band. And I hate that I kind of have to leave him as being anonymous, because then it implicates other people in the band who are completely innocent. But yeah, it became it wasn't just the drugs. It was sort of psychological battery, chronic narcissism, and just an unwillingness to cooperate as colleagues, as brothers, as friends, as bandmates. There comes a point where if someone isn't living up to their own fucking demands, you just go, who the fuck do you think you are? And, you know, we kept threatening to fire this particular gentleman. And he was like, go ahead and fucking fire me. You're nothing without me and all this. And it's like, well, it's better to just dismantle the whole thing. And luckily I'd been kind of dipping in and out of Biffy at the time. And I was more than happy to just go, fuck this. You know, we had a good run. The last record kind of felt like a bit of an accidental child, really. You know, just you could tell that this particular guy had just checked out. He wasn't contributing anything. It was more into the lifestyle of, you know, I'm a fucking musician for a living. I'm going to get fucked up on drugs and not show up to rehearsal anymore. And it just all became so fucking boring. You're like, we're supposed to be getting older and maturing and getting better at this, whereas we're just getting worse. It was getting impossible to navigate because you know, you weren't able to have an adult conversation about, hey, you know, I need to be able to trust you. I need you to not show up to fucking sound check on acid. I need you to not tell me that my wife is unattractive. I just need you to be a decent fucking guy in a band and count yourself lucky that you're in a fucking great band. This particular guy could not remain consistent with those particular demands and had to be fucking exited from my life and everybody else's life in the band for that matter. It was like, that's enough of that bullshit. And if anything, it was proved justifiably righteous to do that because he hasn't played a single fucking gig since. Like, this guy, immense talent, can't get a gig.
There's no business like the rock and roll business, is there? Because that kind of behavior would not fly for a second in any other realm.
I know. It's like, you know, I remember having that argument. It's like, dude, you can't show up on acid to, you know, this is your fucking job. We're a business. And it was like, well, it's a business and it's a party. And I'm like, well, it's a business and it's a party in so much as if you were working in a bank and you showed up on acid, you'd be fucking fired. You know, it's like, and again, it'd be like, well, fucking fire me then, you know. Mm. I sound like I'm getting riled up, but I get, whenever I have to think about that stuff.
I understand, mate.
It just, it's like, what a waste, but it was always going to happen. That band was always going to happen like that. I didn't feel at the time that it was a waste because we'd said all we needed to say. We'd made the records. The last record was very much by like process of elimination. This guy wasn't contributing anything anymore. He was just too fucked. So it was all really, really, really tricky. And, you know, I really enjoy everything I have done since. I'm really proud of the records I've done since. I'm doing another one now. But it's just annoying when you have to think about that, you're like, oh, it's so horrible. It's so unnecessary. It really was, you know.
Safe to say there's no reunion on the cards anytime soon then?
No. I mean, like, there's been offers, but they're, you know, nowhere near enough money to get me back in that fucking monkey cage.
for the psychological fucking chaos that will ensue.
Yeah. You know.
So Biffy's already happening, and so you can kind of pretty easily just segue as a full-timer into that band. Like, is it just a seamless transition?
Yeah, I mean, I'd been mates with them for 8 years by that point. I'd just always enjoyed hanging out with them. I just thought they were fucking such sound lads. They were all really daft, really good crack. And I thought the music was fucking amazing. I used to go and see them all the time. And then when they got to the sort of latter half of the puzzle campaign, maybe even earlier than that, I was like, I'd read that they were thinking about getting another guitar player, like kind of like Nirvana did, you know, they started.
With Pat. Yeah.
Yeah. They started getting to that point where it's like a 3-piece is not going to fill an arena kind of thing. And I had mixed feelings about that. Cause I was like, I don't want them to be, I just want them to be a 3-piece. That's one of the things that's so fucking cool about them. But I had sort of played dirty with it really and go, if anybody is going to be your guitar player, it's fucking me. Don't look any further. I'm telling you, nobody's going to do it better than me.
And you had that very forthright conversation with them, did you?
I love it. Right, man. Yeah. Well, I mean, it was via email, right enough.
but they could feel the firmness of the words.
Well, that was it. You know, we'd been mates for ages. And I think that it's that thing, isn't it? Like we were just talking about, you could, the management or the fucking record company could have probably coaxed some guy from the Killers to be in the band, but they wouldn't have known it. It's like, oh, well, you know, this guy's world class. We've got to get you this guy. But they wanted their mate out of Oceanside. And that's fucking blows my mind to this day. And it just, oh shit, I turned that. Sorry, I turned
it's all right,
that.
Mate. It's all good. We're very loose over here in the world of life. And
why is it? That's my son asking for me to order him pizza.
In the middle of the day. That is living la vida loca. That is the good life.
Sorry, man.
And he's on the case just like that. I mean, that is parenthood 101. What a dad.
I know.
What a rad dad.
My pizza.
En route. And haven't you got your old Oceanside bandmate in Biffy as well?
Gambler.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's quite bizarre, man. He's an incredible pianist, incredible keyboard player. He actually was a guitar player primarily in Oceanside because he didn't have a keyboard at the time. So he'd just play guitar because he just built this guitar and he learned to play guitar by being in the band. Anyway, there came a point where I had to duck out of Biffy for paternity leave for a couple of days, a couple of gigs. So they got Gambler in to play guitar and thought he was a sound enough lad. So they were like, well, we need a keyboard player, so shall we just get him? And yeah, in he goes. So it's quite, you know, again, it's really commendable for them to just go, let's get these lads. They could have got fucking anyone. And yeah. God knows at the time, the record company were obsessed with getting world-class this, world-class that, you know. But, you know, I guess I'm world-class now, aren't I? I've been there fucking 15 years.
The proof is in the pudding, my friend. And, like, I've never met the twins. I only met Simon properly for the first time at Wacken. But that dude just strikes me as, despite the fact that he's, you know, a well-known rock star, a household name within the music worldwide community and a very recognizable face, etc. It just seems like the most down to earth, humble, decent dude. Is that safe to say?
It's very safe to say, and that's exactly why I fell in love with all of them. They're all exactly the same, very well brought up, wholesome lads, you know. And the thing is, Matt, is, you know, I'm from where I'm from in West Yorkshire. It's quite a cynical place, you know. Mm-hmm. You can't.
I get it. I know the area.
So
I know the culture.
So to meet people like that was just so refreshing, and it certainly brought out the best in me. It's like any relationship, isn't it? You know, you gravitate towards people who bring the best out in you, who make you feel like you're a better person for knowing them. And I just did. They're just always really, really good crack. Brought some bad habits my way, such as smoking copious amounts of weed, which I thought was acceptable for so long until I realized I can't function like this anymore. But those guys, they still fucking love that shit.
Yeah, they're made of sterner stuff. I have heard that Simon does, you know, like a smoke. And for me, I can't imagine being productive or fulfilling my, you know, duties as any kind of individual in the world with a head full of fucking Mary Jane. I just can't. Yeah. I can't function on that stuff. I call it parajuana.
When I was in Oceanside, it was kind of necessary just to sort of not, you know, get into fist fights every fucking hour. But at the same time, I used to think of it as like, you know, you're waiting for inspiration to strike. So, you know, you'd have a couple of joints and, you know, play a bit of guitar and nothing would happen at all. It just doesn't work. It does not fucking work. So it's only when I stopped really that I was able to sort of really get focused and learn how to make stuff on my own. Because Oceanside was always about just getting together with your mates and jamming. And I just could never do it. I'll tell you the story of how the very day I decided to never, ever fucking smoke weed again.
Please.
Right. So we were playing.
And you've stuck to it?
Pretty much.
Yeah.
I'll have a cheeky drag now and again.
That's good enough.
I won't sit in my room having a joint to myself or anything like that. Because this particular festival, we were in Norway, I'm going to say 2014, something like that, with Biffy. And we were playing this festival with St. Vincent. Now, at the time, I was a huge fan. I thought she was fucking, you know, she's an incredible guitar player, Annie Clark. I just thought she was amazing. And everybody knew that I was so giddy about getting to see a gig, you know, getting to play a gig with her. And Churd, our guitar, I was upstairs having a smoke in my room. And Churd, our guitar tech, says, get down here now. We're in the bar getting wrecked with Annie Clark. She's fucking hilarious. And I couldn't do it because I was fucking stoned. I couldn't do it. And I'm like, it ends here. I just can't be that guy whose social life is just completely dependent on whether I've had a joint or not. Like, one of the only times in my early 20s that I could not score any weed. I went out and met the woman who I married and had a child with. That happened because I didn't fucking get stoned. That would never have happened if I was baked. So it's like things like that I have to remind myself. It's like there's nothing's going to happen to you when you're stoned. You're just going to sit in and watch telly and eat fucking hobnobs. That's it, you know?
Life lessons with Mike Bernard. I love that. You know, and that is no coincidence. Do you believe, my friend, in fate and in destiny and these things? Because I don't believe anything happens by chance. And so I think the timeline for me of your life and your musical path in particular, I think for me, looking at it from the outside, everything has led you to where you are now. It seems like a pretty sweet place. So as much as there are, you know, strong emotions that come up when you think about the past and, you know, perhaps missed opportunities, whatever, you're where you need to be, right?
I feel really blessed, Matt. Yeah, I'm 47 now, so I kind of, very rarely do I look back, and when I do try and look back, my memory is going a bit, you know, especially like short-term memory is absolutely fucked. I can't remember where I've left my glasses every 5 minutes, stuff like that.
That'll be the weed again. Thank you very much.
Well, exactly. But I kind of think of it as when I look back far enough, it's kind of like I'm standing at the top of a very tall building, and it gives me this kind of vertigo feeling of like, that was a fucking really long time ago. So I don't tend to do that a whole lot unless I'm telling some hilarious story like I'm telling you. I don't know what's fate and what's not. I mean, I just feel really fucking lucky. I think I've tried to maneuver things as best I can. And, you know, I want to play guitar for Biffy Clyro. I'm just going to fucking ask him. I want to get Dave Lombardo on my record. I'm just going to fucking ask him. So stuff like that, you know, you just got to be cheeky sometimes and go, well, what is it you want to do? I have been really lucky in terms of like being a guitarist. I'm not like academically clever at all, but I did manage to get a degree in music and like an A level and stuff like that. So that's pretty miraculous because I'm really not very fucking clever at all. And I've got no other qualifications apart from that and English. And that's all I need, really, because I write lyrics as well for me band and that. But no, it's not. I don't know where, I can't remember what the question was. Memory's absolutely fucking shit.
No, it's all good. Just sort of talking about, like, you know, there's no such thing as coincidences. Everything happens for a reason, things like this. And, you know, it's obviously clear that if music is the only thing that really matters to you, that stands to reason that that would be the thing that you could excel in.
Yeah, well,
even academically.
My ma is a big fan of the old soothsayers, you know, the fucking mediums and all that. And so she's got recordings of them telling her this shit in like the mid-90s, exactly how it was going to go.
Actual recordings as well, not just her memory.
I've heard the actual cassette recordings, and you're like, it's one of those things that as the years went on, I was like, well, that didn't happen, did it? And it's like, and then sure enough, it fucking did. Strange stuff. Really, really strange stuff. I am just jammy. I've done all right.
My mate has a good phrase, shy kids don't get sweeties. And that's,
you've got to be a hustler, man.
It's the theme of my life. You know, the only reason I get to do what I do is because I ask. And the worst they can say is no.
Exactly, mate. Exactly. You've just got to be in it to win it.
Amen. Amen. So I just want to talk very quickly about the Opposites record. Was that the first album that the band were working on when you were sort of like, you know, sort of a fully fledged member? Because I have particularly strong emotional connections with that album because it came out as Kerrang Radio was closing down as an FM station, and so it was my last months presenting on the air before they flipped the format and became internet only and got rid of loads of people. And so, you know, songs like the title track Opposite and Biblical we would play so often, and I can't hear those songs now without crying because it just reminds me of such a magical bittersweet time in my life where this dream job and life that I had was coming to an end, and that music just, you know, hit that tone so wonderfully well. Did you work at all on that album with the guys? Were you a part of the creation of it?
Well, firstly, no, I'm not a fully fledged member. I never have been, but they very kindly asked me to come and play. I think they just wanted to give me the chance to come and hang out in fucking LA for a couple of weeks. By the time I got involved, they'd done everything. There was like a fucking, God, there was like a gospel choir on one of the songs. It was, you know, the mariachi bands and fucking God knows what else. It was definitely their kitchen sink album. They just went bananas. So by the time I came in, there was very little I could actually fling at it. But there's stuff in there. I mean, what you've got to understand about that record, Matt, is that there is a million little layers in every song. There's just so much stuff. And it's all tiny, tiny details. And it was a really important lesson for me to learn about production, that it, you know, things can sound really simple when there's a lot going on. And it kind of blew my mind a lot that, you know, there's just these tiny, like little spices just thrown in that you can't tell they're there until you take them away.
It's a beautiful album. It's such a rich, wonderful, exquisite piece of work.
It really is. And it's, again, you know, that was a really prolific time for Simon. He wrote like 50 songs for that album. I feel like I shouldn't really be talking about Biffy. That's for them to talk about. But it was all such a magical time to see somebody at the height of his powers. It's like third album on a major label, sixth album in total, and he's going to Warner Brothers. There's 50 songs. Fuck off. You know, I'm like, wow. You know, and, you know, they're all great. You know, there's a companion album called Similarities that's fucking incredible as well. Like, some of their greatest songs ever are just B-sides. So, yeah, I went in and just flung a few bits of fluff at some stuff. I'm proud. There's some stuff in Sounds Like Balloons, which is incredibly subliminal.
Yeah, love that.
In the choruses, I nicked a trick from Tim Smith of Cardiacs, who's pretty much my fucking Yoda. And
you've worked with him, right? You've got a relationship.
Worked with him, yeah. Did some stuff with him, and then, but yeah, it's like a sort of mandolins playing in each, panned quite hard. This great big fucking wall of mandolins, but they're just sort of tickling your ears at the side. There's a bunch of stuff like Skylight and Victory Over the Sun, just these tiny little textures that are me.
Victory Over the Sun's a fucking awesome tune.
I know,
well,
it's a fucking masterpiece, isn't it? Like, what? I mean.
So what have been some of your highlights live-wise of your time over the last 15 years with Biffy? Because, you know, that's a band at the very, very top of the live game. Are there any particular, like, because I imagine, right, if I'm not going out on too much of a whim here, there are moments in the set where you do have more time than the other three to kind step back a bit and scope the, you know, the scenario and just be like, whoa.
Yeah, totally. There's an awful lot of, that was kind of my big learning curve, was starting playing for them, where it was like when not to play, basically. So we did three nights at the Barrowlands in Glasgow.
Love that place.
Where we played like two albums a night, like the selected bits from two albums per night. So they were pulling out all these songs from the first three albums and B-sides that were just fucking revelatory. It just felt like the whole audience couldn't believe they were getting to see these songs performed again. Like, they'd been exhumed, like old, you know, late friends. They were being greeted like, it was just fucking magic. Absolutely amazing. And the Barrowlands is great. I mean, to play with Biffy in Glasgow anytime is fucking mental anyway, but the Barrows for three nights was just fucking wonderful. It's all on YouTube.
Real magic in the air, I imagine.
Oh man, fucking, I'd do anything to be able to live that again. It was just the best gigs I've ever played. And then we did Glastonbury. I'd done Glastonbury with them a couple of times and it was excellent, but this was the pyramid stage, like just before the headliner, and we fucking absolutely smashed the place. It was a glorious day, and the band loved it. they all fucking loved it. That Pyramid Field was as busy as I've ever seen it, and I've been there a bunch of times just as a punter, you know. Fucking A, so that was it. That's, you know, I mean, and Donington last year, we headlined Donington, and, you know, I used to go to Donington as a kid. My mum used to take me to see Iron Maiden and all that, and just to headline it, and it just felt, we've done it once before, but this time felt particularly, I don't know, they you know, they really step up the plate. I think the thing is about Biffy is that they're a much bigger band than anybody kind of wants to admit. So whenever they're kind of announced as being a headliner or something, it's like, what? Biffy Clyro? Are you fucking joking? And so they've always got this spring in their step. There's always a mild fucking air of, we'll show you exactly who we are, you know. And they've got the tunes. They've got the tunes. They know how to fucking deliver it. I just, you know, to me, I can say this because I'm not in the band. I just don't know what more you want from a fucking rock band, really. Like, they do so many things that are really fucking relevant to my interest. And again, they're authentic as fuck. Apart from, you know, maybe being more famous in some quarters for being, you know, balladeers or whatever. To me, they're a fucking really intelligent, the sort of mathematical edge.
Well, that's always been there, hasn't it?
Yeah, it has, yeah.
And it's definitely not gone, you know, it's obviously like, you know, that they've smoothed the edges as they've grown bigger, but it's present in everything they do, that angular, ambitious,
yeah, progressiveness. Well, they just put the emphasis more on singles for a few albums there, but they've kind of come in full circle a bit more and getting their freak back on. I don't know what more you'd want out of a fucking, you know, arena fucking type band, you know. I think they're fucking brilliant.
How much fun have you had stepping into this Empire State Bastard realm with Simon and seeing, you know, a guy you've known 20 years or whatever just like still surprising you all this time down the line?
It's quite emotional, Matt, I don't mind telling you, because, like, you know, there's a quote from David Lee Roth about Eddie Van Halen saying, you know, most of the best times of my life have been stood on here with you. And that's exactly how I feel about Simon. It's just the most pivotal and the most life-affirming, holy shit, this is happening type moments have been with Simon, you know. And the gigs, I guess we've done about 15 gigs, probably not even quite that many. And they've all been fucking great, you know. Playing with Naomi, she's just so fucking heavy, her playing is brilliant, and Dave is just thunderous. It's impossible how much fucking power and passion he can exude, and just to be standing there with my mate doing it, it's like, this is what it's all about, you know. It's supposed to be fun, that's the key, and that's what went wrong in Ocean Size, is that this is supposed to be fun and we're all supposed to be in this together. But weird, it's just narcissism. Narcissism is a sinister and fucking poisonous trait in any fucking relationship. It doesn't work. So you have to make sure that the people that you're in it with are fucking all right.
You know? You gotta kill that ego, man. And you look at Simon and a Dave. I mean, Dave especially, man, like, there is zero ego there. And like, I sat with him for about an hour that day at WAC, and we've spent some time over the years conversing and just sitting down with him. He was having a smoke, just having a beer, just like, this is just a fucking bloke. Like, there's no airs of bullshit around him. There's no self-importance. You know, he knows he's the shit behind the kit, but in life, he's just a humble dude that will just, you know, hang out and shoot the shit. And that's what you want, isn't it?
I think that's the fascinating thing. And I think that's why Dave feels so at home with us. He's maybe spent a lot of time, particularly in the 80s, just surrounded by alpha male toxic wanks.
Meatheads, yeah.
Yeah, so he, you know, me and Simon are pretty tactile, you know. We like getting a good hug on. And I think he's just feeling it. It's like a breath of fresh air. And yeah, it feels really a lot like a band. You know, none of us have met each other when we went to rehearse, you know, none of us have met Dave and nobody had met Naomi. It was just me and Sai. So it's like, how, what is this going to be fucking like? We've got gigs booked and we've not met. What the fuck, you know? And miraculously, it was fucking perfect. A real blessing. I can't believe it to this day.
Yeah, man. No, it was a real pleasure just sharing that moment with you before you went on at Wacken and just seeing the four of you connecting. And as I said, the chemistry is there. I can't wait to see what the future has in store for that band specifically. So you think that, a follow-up record with all four people in the room together is definitely, you know, a timeline of events that we're going to see unfold.
That's certainly the plan. I'll be getting to it. I've just got to quickly get this current record out before I get...
You're looking around like you've got to get it out this afternoon.
I fucking have. Like, I feel like I am. It's like, get this out now and then I can just fucking get back to drinking tequila and double espressos every morning. And the SP
the Rivers Cuomo approach to songwriting.
Fuck yeah, man. Let's go.
Well, listen, mate, it's bang on two there. So that's an hour in the can, and that seems like a wonderful place to end. Absolute pleasure having you on the show. Absolute pleasure getting to know you in the brief moments we've shared, and look forward to many more down the road.
And yourself, Matt. Thanks so much for having us, man.
Baby, if you could, would you go back to the start? Take any fresh steps or watch it all fall apart again.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.